Chapter 9, Orca. And now, to return to the dolphin legend and this journey through the 80s. Stories weaving in and out of time, the dolphin is our thread. For 30 years, one dolphin, Fungi, has lived in the Dingle Bay, Ireland, a place I visited on both my first and second ancestor journey. I spent my only 2 days there when bicycling from town to town around the island 45 years ago now, so touched by its beauty and the call of water. It was some years after that Fungi showed up and began interacting with people there, and he has been there ever since. One chapter in such a world history of dolphins and whales interacting with the human family. Then there is the royal family, specifically Prince Charles, who has been prominent in the Irish news this visit. His name and story was one of many in the dolphin legend, as Peter shared it during our month on the road. Prince Charles, the Prince of Wales. Turns out he too had had some significant encounters with dolphins and whales as well, so Peter reported. Such a mythic name to be lived into, to be explored. On further investigation, it turned out Charles had actually founded an organization to serve as an international dolphin watch, collecting story after story of dolphins and whales rescuing humans at sea. The true accounts, when woven together, made any listener wonder why. Why do they help humans, that species, many of whom have hunted them to the point of extinction? Why do so many continue to have quite amazing interactions when it seems so many are intruding, unaware on their feeding grounds, running up close in commercial boats, almost loving them to death? I think it's about 6 boats a day, capacity of 10 perhaps, that go out in Dingle and guarantee time with one dolphin, Fungi. It is the biggest tourist attraction going on, even replacing fishing, not only there, but in Indonesia, as well as so many other places. After spending a month with Peter and the legend, I witnessed how these stories, not even the experience, but simply the stories of a whale interacting with humans, was literally life-changing. Some doorway was opened or remembered through these stories that reminded us of a more vast intelligence than the human one, so often seeming to be in charge. Pelorus Jack is but one whale who would take the ship's line into his mouth and lead many through the difficult straits down under, creating a safe passage. Seeing his worn teeth as he now sits in a Sydney museum, brings tears to the eyes of some, feeling the depth of relationship. Somehow the story is one of many that serves as proof we were and are connected. We were and are not alone. There is truly interdependence. If not with the whales, with the mushrooms. If not the mushrooms, the medicine and beauty within a rainforest that gives us medicines for life. I drove Peter to the airport 1 month after his arrival on Turtle Island. The entourage of people engaged by this time had grown, and there was barely a moment free to reflect, debrief, catch up on the many synchronicities that were happening each day that the large silver trunk was opened. More stories of contact, mysterious encounters, healings, and inspirations. A living legend, moving people to think beyond boundaries. We needed experiences that invoke this truth of our interspecies world and the possibility therein, the reality of interbeing. And listening to the legend motivated one to live it, to give attention not only to the dolphin, but to all of nature. I again was filled with gratitude for this out-of-the-box time. I could not believe it was to end without the kind of contact Peter and I had had at the start. I needed that debrief and some sense of a next step, especially as he had decided to leave the legend with me, and that was surely going to deepen our relations, large ocean in between or not. In those days, without security checks, I slipped away from the farewell committee and told Peter I would see him at the gate. Nothing in my heart and mind had been planned, but I moved anyway. Standing in the airport noise, in the mystery, I found silence within, and there simply asked again, "Where am I to be, and what is mine to do?" As the answer came through me, I moved and found myself at the ticket counter. "Do you have any seats left on the plane to Australia?" She said no. "How about as far as Hawaii?" "Yes," she said. "We have one, but it's too late to check in." "But I don't have any luggage. I just need a ticket." She paused and looked at her watch and said, "Well, okay, you have 15 minutes then to get to the gate." "Plenty of time," I said. With a flannel shirt on and an old pair of coveralls, I was lucky to have just enough credit on my card to take me across the Rainbow Bridge. I ran to the gate. I looked at Peter and then turned, hugging all goodbye, and we boarded the plane together. My assigned seat just happened to be next to him. 5 hours later, we said goodbye again, after an essential time of incorporation, part of any rite of passage. This time was truly another phase of initiation into a new way of living, loving, listening, and leaving. A week later, when I flew back to LA, I went and sat on the beach at Santa Monica where the story had begun. Meditating, asking again how to live this way I knew I was here for. When I opened my eyes, I swear to God on any Bible, there was a gray whale swimming so close to the shore in the surf. It was the first whale I had ever seen. A year later, I was to discover there had only been one whale, the same kind of whale, a gray whale, ever released from captivity back into the wild off of that coast. A gray whale named Gigi. John and Tony Lilly, some months later, got back in touch with me and invited me to a new family resort being built in Mexico. This was the place they felt maybe Joe and Rosie could be released back to the wild and make relations with local cetaceans, and a true human-dolphin community could be awakened. This had been John's dream all along, and Tony was the heart behind his brain. Even with good intentions, however, the social mix of money, experiments with ketamine, party life in resort land, all combined to form a questionable venue at best. Fortunately, the Lilies had also invited the Nolmans, Jim and Katie, to come at the same time, and we were an instant family match. What is it about a kind of recognition and knowing that comes of people and place? Is it about class, tribe, race, culture? Is it about a kind of song line or soul line? For me, it's something I have thought about regarding ancestral lines. Who were the Irish and German before they were that? And which migratory tribe do I still in some way walk with? What lines of abuse and harm am I able to consciously sever, if that has been or is even possible? And what lines of peaceful culture do I have? Might I water, grow, listen for and to? What ceremonies have been lost? Ones of individuation, initiation, confirmation, and connection that may help guide us into healthy streams. What ones have been remembered, survived through times of genocide, colonization, gender oppression, racism, any and all of the isms? And what ones are being discovered, emerging through truth and love, to help us carry on with care and respect for life? And within all of that, what do the whales and dolphins have to tell us, who have been here far, far longer? These are but some of the questions I walk and live with over many years now. While out playing music with these wild dolphins in Mexico, two very significant events took place. The first morning, as I was clapping my sticks underwater, an albino dolphin surfaced alongside the boat. Did you see that? Was that imagined? Jim and Katie had not, and I was left alone with the magic. It reminded me of seeing that whale for the first time. Did you see it? I had shouted. I wanted so much to share it with others. Without that, I was left almost questioning whether or not it was real. Yet both times, no one had. And still, I knew it was real. Each time, it was just for me to be with the gift. I could not help to want to share such an experience. And always that seemed the question, how to share the gift, how to share the story in a way that actually blesses and engages others. I realized there would likely be many ways to come, and certainly I was not here to take every human to be with whales or dolphins. Yet a few, to be with the largest dolphin, the orca whale. This was something clearly for me to do with Jim and Katie Nolman. That was the second significant discovery in Correas, in the boat these mornings offshore. We were to dream and co-create some experience of human-dolphin community, not here in Mexico, but in the Northwest, where such interspecies tribal relations were somehow perhaps still alive. Jim Nolman was and is an artist, a musician, father, husband, grandfather, author, and most relevant here, one who had dedicated his life to what he named interspecies communication. Being with him, I found my song again sung back to me. This focus was part of the missing piece too often in white modern Western culture. Therein, aspects of it surface in bird watching, gardening if not farming, nature walks and talks, scientific experiments to prove our connection, conservation, environmentalism. Yet too often in my experience, it has been what a young Paiute man had said to me yesterday. More on paper than in the living. When I say to people, think like a circle, I am asking for a relearning for many of us, as the circle for too long has focused on humans and too often our kind. Herein lies some of the roots of imbalance, injustice, inequity. To work and live a life that is not so human-centric is a muscle that needs to be stretched. Bringing different community leaders into a more wild place, into the company of the orca, was a doorway that opened in my conversations with Jim. He had the passion, the wild hair, the earliest of relations initiated with orca. I had the dolphin call in my ear and in my bones, and the dream of community and pod consciousness that they inspired. Together, over the next 5 summers, we journeyed way up north into the waters off of Vancouver Island there to make a camp. We formed a solid core team who shared the dream, essential for any community to exist. Through the year, most often I simply met the people right to invite, part of that tribal recognition, I guess, again, part of feeling and knowing we were part of something bigger, something that wanted to happen. Some had experience in the wild and some did not. Some had notoriety for their community peace work. Others were teachers, leaders, rinpoches, teens just growing up, musicians wanting a new band, students of the indigenous ways, investors in a new planetary culture. Best practices quickly emerged as we asked how to do this. Some could help finance and some were supported to come. All knew not to go after the orcas, but to invite and call them to us. We lived lightly on the shoreline of a small island, waking each day to share dreams and stories of the night. I could go on, but it's best to simply say we lived in a way that felt whole, if only for a month. Our relations with each other and with the orcas, I know, left me with a few more healthy cells in my body, something I deeply needed at the time. Each night, 4 or 5 of us out of around 20 would go out to our small cabin cruiser anchored in the bay. This was our lab, our music studio, our dream tank. Enough space for 4 to sleep and 1 little center galley where we could gather around a microphone. For hours, we would draw, talk, write, story after story, weaving into a new one, waiting, listening, calling orca. Jim playing reggae, Thai Situ Rinpoche chanting, children making up an orca love song. And then we would hear them, most every night in the distance, sounding in a way that had an extremely wide range of notes for our ears to take in, much less mimic and respond to. The electric guitar helped. The energy and sheer wild joy in hearts I sensed had a part to play as well. For connection, it happened. They consistently came, circled our home, sang their songs, joined in Jim's jam and chord progressions, even nudged our underwater microphone. Everyone's experience was expressed, recorded, and shared in different ways. A common ground of high was established. High ground for sure. Such experiences of relating brought out the best in everyone. Not to say again that there were no misunderstandings, logistical challenges, edges to be faced, inside and outside weather. Riding the waves, there were many. And yet simple daily life close to nature, close to orca, brought us all closer to ourselves, our deepest knowings and longings, It brought us closer to each other, if not Spirit, God, the great mystery. For me, it was a chance to live in the mystery, the not knowing of each day, to be determined more by needs than desires, affected more by all of nature than by humans alone. The orca's breath became the best meditation teacher I had ever met. Hearing and seeing them daily was the wake-up call I needed. I deepened my trust and devotion to something bigger than the mainstream culture and system that I had been offered. Living so intimately, outside of that box, even if for only a month each summer, answered a prayer and seeded ways of community that I still carry with me today. In those years, as mentioned earlier, I had begun working with Linda Tellington Jones and others in citizen diplomacy in the USSR. She had been invited there by Jim Hickman, head of the Esalen Initiative, to share her work on healing touch with vets, farmers, Olympians, horse people of any and every kind, in a country on governmental levels we simply could not communicate well with. Yet traveling there and engaging one-on-one, we were able to find family and build a taste of global community. Linda and Jim had invited me to join them, and in return, I invited them to Orcananda. Somehow, without each of these journeys, neither would have been as meaningful or sustainable for me. In the Northwest, I found another spiritual home in a way of living and being with all species. And in Russia, I was able to share the gifts I had received, offering story, song, tea touch, and simple, true, heart-to-heart communication. Those were particularly tense, frightening times in international relations, nuclear threats looming. Traveling there as a U.S. citizen, not to mention as a woman, without these interspecies relations being simultaneously developed, I know I would have collapsed into despair. The impact of the orcas rippled out across cultures, individual and international boundaries and borders. I was fortunate to spend many days of my 6 visits with Igor Tcharkovsky, his students, midwives, and best of all, babies, all together, all focused on water birth. I remember the first time I witnessed a baby born into water, surrounded by music and love. It was another aha moment. In a way, until then, I had been focused through my own life experience and Groff's work on healing the trauma from those first moments of life, some of it carried in the body for lifetimes. And now, knowing that it was not the answer or even a way for everyone, this birthing in water touched me so deeply and opened a possibility for me to participate as an auntie, if not a trained midwife, and perhaps even a mother in the future.